everybody. Welcome to another episode of Supernatural George. I'm Mittens, and today we're going to be talking about Season 7, Episode 15, Repo Man, written by Ben Edlund and directed by Thomas J. Wright. Here we go, diving right back into the agonies after last week's reprieve. Thanks, Ben Edlund! Funny, this one takes place in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, where Cass will someday look for Kelly and see Dagon on tape killing angels, before disappearing off to heaven with barely a word to Dean about it in Season 12, Episode 15, Somewhere Between Heaven and Hell. I mean, considering those are the only two things in the series that happen in that town, I find it kind of interesting that they're both demon-related, at least. And this episode, underneath the abject horror of it all, it's a twisted little love story of loss and longing, which, two episodes before Cass returns, will be pretty heavily mirrored onto Dean. So there's that. It's also interesting this episode has flashbacks to late season 3, to a hunt we never saw before, while Sam and Dean were searching for Lilith, probably shortly before Dean was dragged to hell. We also meet an interesting one-off side character in Nora, a woman who learned about the supernatural back then, and then, despite losing touch with Sam and Dean, now devotes her life to learning white witchcraft in order to protect both herself and others. She's built a whole business around it, even. Since we never hear from her again after this, I like to hope she's still doing just fine, still blissfully protected by her ever-growing knowledge and power. Which also makes me think about all the other people who suddenly were unable to contact Sam and Dean during this time in Season 7, when they were frequently changing their phone numbers, on the run and hiding from Leviathan. How many other people may have tried to call them for help and failed to reach them? I mean, how many people even know that Bobby's dead yet at this point? Hopefully Lee at least clued in his contacts before he retired. Alas, questions that canon never bothered to answer for us, but lovely fodder for fanfic, so honestly, who am I to really complain too hard? I love all the side characters that we never hear from again, and I like to hope they're all just doing well. If they never come back into canon, I can just continue believing that. There are just so many interesting little callbacks, including the break your heart shot of Dean driving the Impala in flashbacks. And gosh, I miss that car. But I think all the highlights are tidily summed up in Liz Bob's post that I linked in the post for this episode. Definitely go give that a read. There's only two pages of stuff in my tag for this episode, and I linked the three actual meta posts in the notes there too. And with only one more episode standing between us and the return of Cass, and only eight more episodes left in Season 7, we're finally starting to get somewhere all around. So on that note, let's zoom into the then segment. We open with a blast from the past. That is, Lilith literally blowing up everyone in that police station way back in 312 Jusen Bello, reminding us who Lilith is, with flashes of Dean's time in hell and Lilith tormenting him later in 4-6 Yellow Fever, killing her vessel's grandfather in 316, Dean stabbing some demons to death, all to remind us of the good old days of the apocalypse era. We then cut to Death telling us about the wall he put up in Sam's soul to block out the hell trauma, and the result of Sam's wall falling, that he now hallucinates Lucifer all over the place, and uses the magic button of a wound that's now a scar on his hand to break those hallucinations and reestablish contact with reality. And how Sam has sort of let himself become comfortable with that continuing to work. And then we come to now, which is actually, according to the Chiron, 4 years ago. So, right back in the middle of the Lilith apocalypse, hell is coming for Dean era. Charming. A woman pulls up behind the parked Impala, And gosh, isn't it nice to see the Impala again after so many piece of shit cars going through the rotation in this season? She cautiously goes into an isolated cabin in the woods. Inside, she finds Sam, who insists that she shouldn't have come, but she wants to see this through after participating in all the research. She wants to see Dean torturing or interrogating a demon. They hadn't been in time to save the demon's victim, but now they're looking for leads on Lilith. The demon lets the man he's possessing come to the surface. Jeffrey appears horrified, begs them to save him, not to hurt him, but Dean tells him that they need information from the demon and have to cut into him to get it. Jeffrey tells them, "Whatever you have to do," in apparent horror at what the demon, quote, made him do, murdering a string of women. The demon comes back. The torture goes on and on. We see it in little flash cuts of Sam and Dean flinging holy water at him, beating him up. And the demon finally breaks and tells them what they want to know before Dean exorcises him back to hell. And then we cut to the title card. Post-title card, we're still back in the past, riding in the Impala as Dean takes Jeffrey's broken body to the hospital. Sam stayed back to clean up the crime scene so Jeffrey won't go down for that woman's murder, and gosh, they really tried to do right by this guy back then. I mean, we almost never see them stay behind to help clean up a mess or preserve the innocence of a victim. And yet this one time that we do see it, it's going to come back to bite them in the ass. We see Jeffrey is in a mail carrier's uniform, and Dean advises him to tell the doctors that he was mugged, and not to mention anything about the demons before speeding off. Just abandoning him there, kind of forgets who he is after this point. They've got more important business, chasing down the leads on demons. There is a very short cutscene on the Blu-ray, which would have fit right in here, of Jeffrey staggering into the hospital and collapsing to the floor, begging for help, while everyone stares at him in horror. And I do understand why it was cut. Doesn't really add anything. It was a well-shot scene. It was an interesting scene, but it's not really necessary. We understand what happened to Jeffrey. And that brings us to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, in the present day. They enter motel room 113, and once again, there's just one digit more than an unlucky number 13. Like last week's street address of 667, like one off from the number of the beast. Well, they're getting close. They're almost to the evil. Dean gets a call from a classified server that turns out to be Frank Devereaux. While Dean's on the phone, we see that Lucifer is still riding shotgun with Sam and just being judgmental about the quality of the motel room. Sam squeezes his hand and Lucifer vanishes. It's a nice reminder that Sam has probably been doing this a lot lately, even if we haven't seen him do it in a while. Instead, Sam focuses on a bunch of police case files. Dean and Frank have a grumpy chat about Dick Roman, and Dean doesn't apparently have any new leads on the Leviathan as a result, so he chooses to focus on the case instead. It all fits the same MO of the demon that we saw exorcised in the cold open, but there was no way that demon could have been freed from hell after squealing on all his superiors. But the details of the new murders match way too closely to explain it any other way. Dean still thinks that the police should handle it because it can't be the demon, and they should be hunting the Leviathan instead. But Sam puts his foot down. This case is unfinished business for them, and Sam feels responsible for fixing what they apparently didn't before. So they stay. And almost immediately are reminded why they try to avoid hunting multiple times in the same town, because people remember them, including the cop on the case. So, like we see the Impala in flashbacks, we also get to revisit a time when Sam and Dean could pose as Agents Bonham and Watts, instead of always being Agents Smiths. When they badge themselves into the crime scene, Dean mentions to Sam that he always worries they'll unwittingly flash their badges at a bunch of Leviathans who would recognize them immediately. Like, it's clear that Dean is worried about being caught by random Leviathans. They are being hunted, after all. And they may have been lucky so far, but how far can that luck go? While they're thinking that grim thought, the cop comes up and grabs Sam's shoulder, and you can see the immediate reaction of, "Oh shit, it's happening, the Leviathans have got us," before Sam realizes that he knows this guy. We also see Lucifer loitering in the background of this whole scene. And I feel like this episode might be our best example of how Lucifer is nothing more than a slice of Sam's own subconscious. It's a hallucination, not a piece of Lucifer plaguing him from inside the cage or some sort of direct connection to the real Lucifer. This hallucination doesn't have any information that Sam doesn't already have himself. Sure, he's trying to helpfully give Sam the detective's name because Sam already knows the detective's name, even if he can't consciously recall it in that moment. Sam has to actively choose to ignore Lucifer and pretend he doesn't recall the man's name. Except actively pretending Lucifer isn't bothering him isn't really working well anymore. He's still standing in the background there, watching on and commenting on everything. I always wondered if Sam had been able to accept and acknowledge that the hallucination was just a facet of himself, instead of insisting on thinking it was separate from himself, as Lucifer, and not as an aspect of Sam, if he wouldn't have had a much easier time coping with it, or coming to terms with it. Instead, he just pushes the button and makes it go away entirely. It's just a variant on Dean's coping mechanism of shoving things down and drowning them in alcohol. And I find it interesting that as Sam checks out the murder scene, he's framed in the shot with a big old stop sign, like, "Stop it, Sam." But the murder itself is exactly the same as the ones we know were committed by poor old demon-possessed Jeffrey. Same victim profile, same cold and efficient methods. And while they examine the scene, they find sulfur and immediately go check on the woman from the cold open who had helped them in the past to make sure that she's okay. She now runs a Wiccan-themed online business. Due to the recent murders, she's taking extra precautions and has just painted a fresh devil's trap on the entrance to her office. She's learned a lot in the last 4 years, apparently has an affinity for it, and was distressed their phone number was no longer working. She'd already tried to call them for help. Sam tries to pass it off as technical difficulties with their phones, and Dean says it's a monster problem, really. At which point, Sam grimaces at him and Dean rolls his eyes. This woman is not a civilian, even if Sam is going to try and treat her that way. She knows her limits, though, and plans to leave town as soon as possible until this whole mess is cleared up. She doesn't want to get in the middle of it again. She asks if they've found Jeffrey yet, and they don't immediately recall who that is. But when they do, it's like they realize they overlooked what should have been their first obvious lead. Nora suggests some demons tend to be, quote, sentimental for people that they possessed. Like the demon would want to possess the same person again for, like, old time's sake. And in light of what happens in this episode and everything we know about demons in general, I think that's actually a hilarious framing for it. Yeah, demons. Such sentimental beasts. I mean, Crowley gets a little sentimental in his as he gets closer and closer to humanity, but, you know, I think that's a function of Crowley himself and not demonhood. We cut to a group therapy session where one guy insists they should be able to get Cinemax, and another man giggles and calls it Skinemax. Much the same way that Dean did without his memories in 211 regarding Dean. Skinemax. When told no by the man leading the meeting, the first guy lashes out angrily. But Jeffrey is in the group. He's very happy that he's been approved to adopt a dog, which is a privilege and a responsibility that he takes very seriously. After he picks up the dog later that day, he's extremely kind to the dog. It's kind of sweet, if you don't know what's coming. And, you know, just reminder, he is going to murder this dog before the end of the episode, so... spoiler alert, but also trigger warning? Yeah. He hears a noise down a nearby alley and cautiously goes to check it out. We see that Jeffrey still walks with a limp, as he's grabbed from behind by Dean with a demon knife to his throat as Sam splashes holy water on him. He's not possessed, and actually doesn't even seem all that shaken by the attack. He's only worried that Sam and Dean scared his dog. Back at Jeffrey's place, Lucifer is still hanging out in the background. As Sam tries to sympathize with Jeffrey's struggles, Lucifer mocks him. When even your own hallucinatory Lucifer knows you're full of shit, yeah, that's a problem. Sam squeezes the scar, and Lucifer poo-poos even that attempt, saying not to bother, as he apparently chooses to flicker himself out. Even Sam's subconscious realizes that this is not even worth it anymore. You know, the button is already starting to fail. Dean breaks the bad news to Jeffrey that the demon who possessed him seems to be back, and Jeffrey is angry and tearful about this. He's in denial as Dean tells him about the new murders. Sam promises to protect Jeffrey, and Jeffrey asks for the name of the last victim. He then tells them the name of the next victim, supposedly on the demon's list. Dean questions why a demon would care, since that obsessive serial killer shit isn't usually something demons bother with. They're just evil in general. They're not organized about it. The counselor guy knocks on Jeffrey's door, interrupting them, and we see Jeffrey lie incredibly smoothly about who his guests are. It should be making us suspicious about how good a liar he might be in general. Sam and Dean aren't paying attention to him, though. They're agreeing that they need to help this poor guy, who even has a state-assigned dad in the counselor guy. Sam goes to watch over the supposed next victim, who works at the local library, while Dean stays behind to watch over Jeffrey. Of course, Lucifer followed Sam to the library. He begs Sam to talk to him, repeatedly getting in the way of Sam keeping eyes on the librarian. Sam looks uncomfortable at the request, just tries to ignore it. Back at Jeffrey's, he's listing off all the injuries that Dean left him with last time. Very matter of fact. 160 some stitches, and, you know, it doesn't even faze him. Dean looks uncomfortable about this, but insists that he's still one of the good guys. Jeffrey was mostly okay, but he lost his job, drank, drifted, and had a mental break and started to talk about what had happened, even if he regrets that now. Dean tells him you should never talk about demons to normal people. And all the while, Jeffrey's plight feels a lot like what Dean's going through since Cass. He's mostly recovered, but he's lost his way and drifted and drinks for the record and had a couple of mental breaks probably and has started opening up about his feelings, only to get told to shove them all back down. Dean knows how that goes. He can identify with this. Jeffrey says that to him, the truth was more important to him than where he was. Like, he didn't care if he was stuck in a mental hospital. It was more important for him to confront that truth. He wasn't in any shape to cope with the world, though. And now that the demon is back, Dean apologizes for everything that Jeffrey's been through. And Jeffrey insists that he owes his life to Dean, to all the people who helped him. But then, out of the blue, he supposedly recalls a place where the demon might go to hide out if he's not already going after the next victim. It's a place where he kept souvenirs end quote, nested. Dean asks why he never mentioned it before, and Jeffrey replies that he didn't want to go there himself. Dean tries to let him off the hook and say, "You don't have to come with me now," but Jeffrey insists that he must go. Back at the library, Sam is still tolerating Lucifer, who is clearly bored. He watches the librarian walk away, alert and concerned for her, but Lucifer distracts him with a hallucination of all the other innocent people in the library bashing their own faces against the tables. Lucifer is entertained, Sam is horrified, but he squeezes his hand to make it go away. Everything is normal and quiet again for a second, before Lucifer returns and again complains of being bored. He wants Sam to pay attention to him. And remember, this is just a part of Sam's own mind, not a separate entity, and the fact it's practically demanding his attention and has probably progressively been getting worse the longer he ignores it, it doesn't bode well for Sam. Again, I ask, if Sam actually acknowledged this as part of himself, instead of trying to push it all off on an outside influence, I wonder if he would have coped a hell of a lot better with it long term. That's neither here nor there, though, because he's not going to get that option. A man walks determinedly into the library, in the direction we just saw Marjorie go, the librarian, and Sam is immediately suspicious of him. Guess the guy looks sketchy to Sam? Like the kind of person who might be possessed by a demon? Judgmental much, Sam? Dude in a black jacket, looking kind of on a mission? But Sam gets up to follow them, still ignoring Lucifer. At the abandoned warehouse that Jeffrey has led Dean to, they're out of cell phone service range, so Dean can't even call Sam to tell him what's up. Probably should have done that first, before you left town, huh, Dean? They leave the dog in the back seat with some jerky and get out to explore. Jeffrey doesn't know exactly which warehouse it was. The demon never let him see it directly, but he knows it's in this area. Back at the library, Sam hears some disturbing noises from the stacks, only to find Marjorie and the guy passionately making out. Definitely a false alarm on the impending murder, at least. Dean and Jeffrey have found the place at last, and Dean is armed with the demon knife. The walls and windows are all painted with sigils, and Dean orders Jeffrey to hang back while he clears the building. He finds a young man chained to a chair and goes to help him. The kid starts trying to yell through the duct tape over his mouth, and Dean just tells him that he won't hurt him, but he has to stay still while he gets him unchained. The kid struggles even more, clearly alarmed, but not by Dean helping him, but desperately trying to warn Dean about the guy sneaking up behind him with a syringe full of drugs that gets injected into Dean's neck before he even figures out he's in danger. And this is why we should always rip the duct tape from the victim's mouth before trying to unchain them from the chair, Dean. Sometimes there's no talking sense to TV characters, is there? Back in the library, Sam watches Marjorie and her boyfriend still smooching out in the open, much more tamely now. It's clearly been a while. They finished their passionate session in the stacks, and even Sam is getting bored. The Lucifer part of his brain is definitely bored. Sam tries to call Dean and only gets a voicemail. I mean, we know Dean's out of cell phone range and possibly unconscious or in danger already. And we already know that Dean himself is the main connection to reality that powers Sam's scar button. So, of course, Lucifer delightedly feeds into Sam's worry over Dean. If his stone one is shattered, the button is going to stop working, right? Sam continues to look over the case notes and points out the obvious as Sam comes to the same conclusions. Because again, Lucifer only knows what Sam knows. The previous victims never had tranquilizers in their blood, but the new victims do. The demon wouldn't need to sedate his victims, but maybe someone pretending to be a demon would? Sam realizes that Dean might be in danger and calls Dean's last cell phone and also gets no answer. And a Lucifer says that Dean's probably dead already, which finally pushes Sam over the edge, and he addresses the hallucination directly. Sam tells Lucifer to shut up, and that's officially the moment that the button stops working. If only Sam had realized. But he's so desperate to get Dean back, he'll even lean into the hallucination for help, even if, again, it's just part of his own subconscious. Lucifer is thrilled that Sam is talking to him again, though, because that gives the hallucination power over Sam. At Jeffrey's apartment, Lucifer even volunteers to help solve the case, pointing out things that Sam is already noticing, like a box for a cell phone scrambler, which would explain why Dean is not answering his cell phone, as well as some spells in Latin that Sam doesn't recognize, but Lucifer presses him to think about. They're a demon summoning ritual, and Sam can't understand why Jeffrey would have a demon summoning ritual, and he asks Lucifer directly, who tells him just to look at the page, at which point Sam recognizes the handwriting. It's Nora's. This shot also shows us our first look at the first street mission cross sign that we'll see again in some incredibly notable scenes in the future. It's not illuminated here, but it will be in 819 when Sam leaves with the Rogue Reaper for Purgatory to save Bobby's soul, and again in 116 when Cass confronts Metatron in the alley and saves that poor man who Metatron was just going to film dying, and again in 13.5 and 13.6, when Cass finally calls Dean after returning from the empty. It's never too late to start all over again, right, First Street Mission Cross? But we'll talk about that eventually someday. Right now, let's return to this episode. Sam breaks into Nora's office, where only Lucifer is waiting for him, reclining with his feet up on her desk. Sam enters and is promptly hit over the head by Nora, who then continues trying to attack him. And of course, Lucifer couldn't give him the heads up that Nora was waiting around the corner to clobber him on the head, because Lucifer doesn't have any information that Sam doesn't already have. If Sam didn't know she was there, neither did Lucifer. Sam stops Nora from attacking him and confronts her with the demon summoning. Nora is distraught and babbles that everything is happening just the way he planned it. Lucifer tells Sam to hit her, to shake her up, because she knows what happened to Dean. And again, Lucifer wouldn't give a shit about that. But part of Sam's subconscious that's making Lucifer happen does. Sam is trying to ignore that advice, but eventually does get down right in her face and threatens her, at which point she sobs that he has her son. Sam asks what she was even thinking, bringing back the demon in the first place, thinking that Nora summoned it for some reason. She clarifies that it's Jeffrey who has her son. We cut back to the warehouse, where Dean is waking up, groggy, and tied to a chair near the first kid. The kid's ear has been cut off and has bled all down his neck, but now that Dean's tied up, Jeffrey drops all pretense. He's petting the dog, giving it water, and then tells Dean that nobody asked him to get involved or to save him. And Dean is confused by this until Jeffrey says that he loved being possessed. He loved the connection and the power, and the demon himself was the love of his life, and set Jeffrey on his true life mission. Dean realizes that Jeffrey is the serial killer. He's the one who wants to kill this list of women in the first place, not the demon. But the demon helped Jeffrey become what he'd been too afraid to be on his own. Dean taunts Jeffrey a little bit, even chained up and at his mercy, and Jeffrey confirms that he was already a messed up little fucker before the demon. He'd been making that list of women for years. insisting only he could hear an evil little steam whistle noise coming from their brains that alerted him to the fact that they needed to be killed. He believed it was his mission to kill every woman from whom he heard this sound. I find it really interesting that, as he's preaching all this at Dean, Jeffrey is playing with the demon knife. And I wonder if he knows what it is, that it's specifically a thing to harm and kill demons. Jeffrey believes that the demon saved him until Dean sent the demon back to hell. And isn't that wild, considering Dean has also lost the person who saved him once upon a time, but saved him from hell, saved him from becoming a demon himself. Back at Nora's office, she's finally spilling all the beans. Even Lucifer's impressed at how effective Sam's mild threat to her was. He didn't even have to slap her or anything. She tells him that she tried to reach out to Jeffrey, sent him care packages in the hospital, but he never responded until recently. He wanted her help to bring the demon back. That most of what he brought her was nonsense, but she sent him away and told him to get more psychiatric help. Until Jeffrey called her back after kidnapping her son. Out of desperation to save her son, she did what Jeffrey asked, translating his wackadoo spell. But that summoning ritual didn't work, and Jeffrey then sent her son's ear to her in a box. Sam reminds her that the demon would have been on deep lockdown in hell for having been a traitor and given up the secrets he had about Lilith. A regular summoning ritual was never going to be enough to get this demon back out of hell, but Jeffrey didn't care. When Nora finally found a spell that would work for sure, Jeffrey gave her another job to make sure that Sam and Dean found him and the trail of bodies he was leaving as clues for them. The whole case was a trap for Dean specifically, because the spell required the blood of the exorcist who banished the demon to hell in the first place. And as we saw in the cold open, that was Dean. Sam is determined now. New plan. He tosses the grimoire on the table and tells Nora he needs a tracking spell to use her son's ear to find her son, because then they will find Dean too. She hesitates. Not wanting to do it at first, I mean, she doesn't want to burn up her son's ear for a tracking spell, and Sam growls at her, "Do you want the ear or the kid?" And disturbingly, Lucifer is impressed with him, his coldness, how effective he's being, which is unsettling to Sam, but seriously, Lucifer is just that awful part of Sam himself. So being impressed with Sam's tactics here kind of says more about Sam than it does about Lucifer, huh? Back at the warehouse, Jeffrey is bleeding Dean's arm with the demon knife and does a pretty quick and dirty psychoanalysis of Dean. Dean had been willing to torture an innocent man to get out the demon. He was so desperate to fix the world back then, and it kills Dean that he can't stop people from getting hurt. He's had a lot of people get hurt in his life. Sam, Bobby, Cass, just to name the big three off the top there. And Jeffrey also seems to know that Dean has already died for this. Because, of course, Dean went to hell for a while too. Or else he means that Dean's about to die for it again, right now, as soon as the demon comes back. But Jeffrey explains to Dean that he gets it. He was depressed because his demon was gone. He was a wreck, an emotional shell, a suicidal drunk, and heck, that does sort of describe Dean since Cass vanished in that lake. Yes, even before Bobby died, it's one of the things that Bobby yelled at him about in the previous Ben Edlund episode. So we've got Ben Edlund continuity here. But Alan, the therapist from the house where Jeffrey's been living, helped him realize what he needed to do to get his demon back. The quote he uses here, "A life well lived comes from the structured pursuit of meaningful happiness, feels like a really warped take on the exact same advice that Dean will someday get from Mildred in 1111 Into the Mystic. The secret to a long and happy life is to follow your heart. Totally, like, flipped around version of it, but what do you expect from a demon-possessed serial killer? Meanwhile here, Jeffrey's pursuit of meaningful happiness and reunion with the demon who helped him become a serial killer, so that kind of taints the sentiment a bit for me. Jeffrey takes the demon knife, a brass bowl, and then walks off, calling for the dog to follow him. The dog even picks up its cone of shame to eagerly bring along with it, as Dean struggles helplessly in horror as he knows Jeffrey is killing that poor dog. Jeffrey comes back a moment later with the dog's heart in the bowl, or some sort of organ, I'm assuming it's a heart, and performs the summoning ritual. The whole building shakes, and it seems like, just for a second, maybe the ritual failed, until Nora's son suddenly wakes up, breaks the chains holding him, rips the tape off his mouth, and flashes demon black eyes at Jeffrey, who looks confused as to why his demon didn't return to him. Dean is freaking out now, helplessly chained to the chair still, as the demon remembers him. The demon goes over and hugs Jeffrey, mashing the bloody side of his head against Jeffrey's face, and Jeffrey is baffled and uncomfortable about this, as the demon begins dancing him around the room like a puppet. Jeffrey wants the demon to come into him, and not that other body. But the demon is done with Jeffrey. Jeffrey has continued to grow and build on what the demon taught him, and the demon is impressed that Jeffrey, his pupil, was able to capture a Winchester on his own. Jeffrey doesn't need the demon's help anymore. But Jeffrey doesn't want the demon's help. He just wants the demon. And isn't that all Dean wants from Cass most of the rest of the series? He doesn't care if Cass is useful, just that he's there with him. And unfortunately, that's the one thing that Cass never fully realizes himself. And I'm going to be mad about that forever. But I'm also going to try and stick to where we are in canon for now and worry about all that later. Plenty of time to yell about that. When Jeffrey tries to tell the demon no, he doesn't want to do it on his own, the demon slaps him down, physically, to the floor, reminding Jeffrey that they don't do no. All through this, Dean has been desperately trying to escape his bonds. The demon taunts him about it, as Dean taunts back that the demon just finds postal workers and makes them go postal. And the demon counters that he's a talent scout for hell, looking for the next generation of superstars. And Jeffrey had what it takes already. Dean asks about the kid he's possessing now, and the demon is dismissive that he intends to burn the kid up quickly before looking for a new target. So Dean's got a mission now to save this kid. Doesn't even know who the kid is yet. And just then, Sam bursts in and goes to attack the demon, giving Dean a little more time to escape his bonds. The demon flings Sam across the room and charges after him, only to be caught by a devil's trap painted on the ceiling. And I'd like to know how that got way the hell up there, all the way up on the ceiling of this big warehouse building. Like, we know Nora knows how to paint a devil's trap. It's very similar to the one painted in her office, but how the hell did she paint it up like 20 feet in the air on the ceiling of this warehouse without anyone noticing them there? Anyway, question for another day, I suppose, because we're never going to find that out. It was magic. I mean, Sam's tall, but he's not that tall. Nora comes in and demands that the demon release her son. Jeffrey then comes at the demon with the demon knife, so I guess he knows what it's capable of. But Dean shoots Jeffrey before he can hurt Nora's son anymore. Nora begins the exorcism as the demon taunts her that he'll be back again, but that's a problem for another day as she comforts her son after the demon has gone back to hell. Back at their motel, Dean collapses face first onto their poison warning Mr. Yuck green beds as Sam mentally grapples with what had happened. Jeremy had just been pretending to be the victim all those years ago. Sam stutters as he tries to put it into words that Jeremy was just acting. Half conscious, Dean replies that he was a psychopath and that's what they do. They act completely normal when underneath they're just balls to the wall crazy. Because hasn't that kind of been Sam's go-to move all season as he's tried to deal with the Lucifers? He's tried to deny it because he could just push that button and make it stop. He tried to separate himself from it like it was just something happening to him and not an intrinsic part of him. And this sudden realization really has Sam scared. Now that the case is over and he can't use the adrenaline rush of working that and saving Dean as a distraction. He asks if Dean is going to sleep, and yeah, Dean's kind of had a rough day. He lost quite a bit of blood and all that. So yeah, screw consciousness, that's what Dean says. But that leaves Sam alone with his Lucifer. And that magic stop button just doesn't work anymore. Lucifer is gonna keep Sam from sleeping. Lucifer wants to stay up and talk to him, but Lucifer explains to Sam that Sam let him in, wanted him, so his banishing tricks won't work anymore, and Lucifer can basically do whatever he wants to Sam now. Sam looks horrified, desperately trying to ignore Lucifer, but that doesn't help at all as Lucifer sets Sam's bed on fire and yells, "Good morning, Vietnam!" at Sam while cackling. And that's where this episode ends, with Sam struggling with the unwanted consequences of a past possession, with Jeffrey dead as an unwanted consequence of his past possession because he wanted to be possessed again. And Dean, caught in the middle of it all, helpless to fix any of it, only wishing he had a certain someone by his side. But as Liz Bob pointed out in the meta post I linked in this episode, something has changed in the narrative structure of the show itself. The Destiel is baked in from here on out, not just an incidental occurrence or a plot device. Jeffrey and their interactions with him straddle that gap from the time before Cass rescued Dean from hell, and now, after he's apparently lost Cass completely and has been floundering in alcoholism and depression, groping around for something to hold on to, some kind of structured pursuit of meaningful happiness, going back to Frank's advice to fake it till you make it, and Elliot Ness's simpler philosophy of hunting as its own reward. But Jeffrey directly compares himself to Dean and Dean's current mental state. He understands Dean's very specific kind of loneliness, which is an explicitly romantic sort of loneliness, and a longing for the described love of his life. So if you haven't been reading the Dean and Catherine love series that I've been sticking in the notes recently, this might be a good time to go back and get caught up on those, because Cass is going to be walking back into Dean's life in 2 short weeks. But first, we have to completely unravel Dean's life and Sam's mental state, and finally push Dean into a state of desperation to engage in a structured pursuit of his own happiness, and we'll be nudged there by a series of cursed objects as we rejoin the Leviathan arc. Dean versus the Ballet Shoes on Season 7, Episode 16, Out with the Old. And until then, you can find me on Tumblr at MittensMorgul or at SPNGeorge. You can find me on Discord and Blue Sky as MittensMorgul. Or you can email me at MittensMorgul@gmail.com. And I look forward to talking to everybody again real soon. And I realize this week I've been doing this podcast now for about a month by writing out all my notes in advance instead of just live talking about what I'm doing as I record the episode. And I think it's a lot more coherent, hopefully. Hopefully I'm forgetting less things. But the main side effect is that what used to take me about 15, 16 hours a week to do now takes me about 4. So I'm gonna happily take that and run with it. So if anyone has feedback for me about how that's going for them on the listener side of this, please let me know. If there's anything I can do to make this more enjoyable for y'all, because I've certainly made it more enjoyable for me. If nothing else, my suffering of season 7 has been sped up. Whew. Anyway, have a good one, everyone.